5 signs he's cheating on you. 3 things that will drive him wild. 10 secrets of lasting relationships. I stop at the articles with promising titles. I can't concentrate on my translation any longer, so might as well make good use of the rest of my day. And since Friday is the day of Venus, the goddess of love, I dedicate a part of my afternoon to my online romantic education. I pay to access articles behind a paywall. I attentively watch several videos, peruse the lists of advice and exercises in women's magazines. An online quiz tells me that my marriage is in danger and that I must act fast to get it back on track. I retain a few salient lessons, give my husband a lot of space, be distant to cultivate mystery, make him jealous, don't confess what I feel so as not to smother him, don't burden him with an excess of emotion and sentimentality, and above all, don't let myself go physically. What comes up most often is the necessity of mystery. Don't reveal or say everything. The key words are coldness, inaccessibility, and distance. It's easier for me to be absent now that the kids are older, but most of the time I still need to be at home. Normally, I don't have any choice but to be present and available. I am in front of the gate to fetch the kids at school, in their rooms to check their homework, in the kitchen to prepare the meals, in our bed asleep, at my in-law's house on Sunday afternoon, on the phone to ask whether I'm picking up the kids at the conservatory or if my husband will take care of it. The truth is that I am easily accessible. I'm told to act mysterious, but for obvious logistical reasons, it's very difficult to do so when you're married with 2 kids. Of course, I diversify my sources. Women's magazines, psychology, statistical studies, astrology, astronomy, political philosophy, personal development, fashion, cognitive science, history, decoration, sociology, gardening, anthropology, geography. I'm interested in everything that might be useful to my love life. The green notebook full of romance tips is not my only notebook. I have several that I rely on, and each has its own purpose. A few years ago, for example, I started keeping a music notebook. The music my husband listens to gives me real insight to his state of mind, so I decided to meticulously record all of that data. For example, when he hums a French tune, that means he's in a good mood. Listening to a French song is also correlated to his sexual arousal. Brazilian music means he's calm, at peace. On the other hand, when he listens to pop, it's rarely a good sign. He becomes cold and distant, and the lyrics are often personal attacks. Keeping these notebooks reassures me and helps me stay in control. I consult my notebook on romantic advice in moments of doubt. Before my date with Maxime yesterday, the inspirational quotes about lasting love gave me the courage to meet him. I knew I was cheating on my husband for the right reasons. Having a lover makes me even more inaccessible and mysterious. Of course, this notebook is also a painful reminder of my status as an eternal novice, as well as an admission of failure. Making a list of rules to follow so that the man who shares my life stays in love with me is rather sad. Why am I condemned to the inexperience of first relationships at 40 years old? When it comes to love, I've learned nothing. I've been reliving the same scenario ever since I was a teenager. I love too intensely, and I'm consumed by my own love, analysis, jealousy, doubt, so much so that when I'm in love, I always end up slightly extinguished and saddened. When I love, I become harsh, serious, intolerant. A heavy shadow settles over my relationships. I love and want to be loved with so much gravitas that it quickly becomes exhausting for me, for the other person. It's always an unhappy kind of love. Adrien, Antoine, Arnaud, my desire to love has always been so great that for each person I'm with, I love with the same intensity. To console myself over one, I leap into the arms of the next, incapable of being alone. Only my dependency on love, rather than on one or the other of these men, was a constant. My inexhaustible need for love has elicited opposite reactions in each of them. For some, it was perceived as an excessive but reassuring proof of attachment. For others, it was a frightening and guilt-ridden responsibility. But in all of these cases, the relationships failed. So when I met my husband, real husband material, I decided to show nothing of my dependency. I had just turned 25, and I couldn't allow myself to ruin anything by stating my intentions too openly to find the love of my life. Today, I've learned to hide it, to pretend, but deep down there is still only one thing capable of getting me out of bed at any hour of the day or night: love. I've never managed to get any other hobbies. This pattern of romantic desperation has condemned me to mix love with tears. I couldn't even escape it on my wedding day. I had to hide in the vineyard and cry in the middle of the party. The music and lights of the dance floor rapidly gave way to silence and darkness. Beneath my fingers were seeds of translucent green grapes. My mother must have seen me leave the party because suddenly she was behind me. She didn't seem surprised by the two translucent tears on my cheeks, perhaps because it is socially acceptable for a bride to cry on her wedding day. Too much joy, one hopes. But her words were unexpected. "Love brings you sadness, just like your mother," she murmured to me, taking me in her arms with all the tenderness in the world. Married just a few hours, my love for my husband was already painful, and I was learning, like Phaedra, that this pain might be hereditary.